Today on Annenberg Radio News,
Cortinas told us it's not going to get better, it's going to get worse. So we're already expecting the worst.
Desperate measures call for, this is what it's called for, desperate school district. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, April 8th, 2010. I'm Heather Hope. Today, 5th and Grand Avenue was renamed Fonte Square after acclaimed novelist John Fonte. Karen Marcus was there. She reports that his family and fans were there to celebrate his life and work.
Los Angeles, give me some of you. Los Angeles, come to me the way I came to you.
That's Vicky Fonte Cohen reading a passage from her father's novel, Ask the Dust.
You sad flower in the sand.
John Fonte died in 1983.
Thank you.
And today would have been his 101st birthday. Bunker Hill's prodigal son was honored with the unveiling of Fonte Square on 5th and Grand Avenue downtown. His son Dan Fonte remembers his father's nostalgia for Bunker Hill.
For some reason, he often found an excuse to stop downtown. I knew he simply just wanted to be here, to walk through the Grand Central Market, to see Angel's Flight, and maybe just to remember those early years. They were his best memories.
Don Fonte was a beloved downtown Los Angeles writer who told the story of living in Bunker Hill, sharing both the difficulties and the beauty of calling this area home.
Councilwoman Jan Perry spearheaded efforts to name the corner Fonte Square.
He immortalizes the tale of Bunker Hill community, the homes, and the people who shaped our own local history.
Gordon Patterson's father, who was a writer, lived with Fonte downtown. Patterson says Bunker Hill wasn't the place it is today.
In those days, Bunker Hill was described as a blighted slum that needed to be raised. The residents there were lower income. Many of them were artists, writers, elderly retired people.
As an Italian-American, Fonte endured and wrote about class and immigration issues still relevant today. Family and fans walked in the very footsteps of the writer, going on the Angel's Flight, stopping at Grand Central Market for lunch, and going to the bar King Edward Salon in Skid Row, familiar scenes in Fonte's novels. Karen Marcus, Annenberg Radio News.
Downtown Los Angeles celebrated Public Health Week today with free food, giveaways, and vaccinations. Our Amanda Herman has more about Health Fest 2010.
She gave us some dahlias and Roman tomatoes to plant.
LA County resident Renee is among hundreds of people taking advantage of today's public health fair.
I've taken my high blood pressure and BMI. But I'm glad I did it. You know, so now I'm well informed. Drink more water, count my calories.
Dozens of public health services gathered at the Civic Center to spread awareness about issues like physical activity, dental care, and smoking. Around 25% of LA residents suffer from obesity, which is above the national average. The program hopes to reduce this statistic through demonstrations of healthy cooking and free samples of fresh foods. Jonathan Fielding is the director of public health for LA County.
We need to have events like this because they are encouraging people to think about things they don't have time to think about all the time. A lot of positive energy and a lot of excitement.
The fair offered self-defense demonstrations, nicotine gum and patches, and free H1N1 flu shots. Jessica St. John directed a booth for the LA County Office of Women's Health. She had a steady stream of people having their blood pressure tested all day.
Everybody here is wanting to let people know that there are services available that they can access. And the more information they have, the more powerful they are in taking charge of their own health.
LA resident Denise Hawkins learned more about healthy eating.
They can make everyone aware of more healthier eating, taking care of yourself. That's what we need to do nowadays.
Fielding said he was excited about the large turnout at Health Fest.
It's the air you breathe, it's the water you drink, it's the food you eat. Public health is all around. We need everybody's help to make progress.
And while public health awareness may not change the air Angelenos breathe, he hopes the fair can at least change the food people are putting in their mouths. More Roman tomatoes and less junk. Amanda Herman, Annenberg Radio News.
Music. Mayor Antonio Villagrosa said today a partial shutdown of city government is no longer necessary. A part of the ongoing drama surrounding the Department of Water and Power, the mayor had said parks, libraries, and other agencies would have to close 2 days a week. The mayor said he changed his mind because of an unexpected revenue stream. But it's worth noting that the city's legislative analyst reminded the mayor yesterday he doesn't have the power to make that decision anyway. Former foster youth have new housing options today in South LA. Chris Foy explains.
Two apartment complexes in South Los Angeles are the focus of a new renovation project that began today to serve homeless youth. The program's developers aim to help youth who have transitioned out of the foster care system and low-income families by providing them affordable housing, as well as a variety of on-site and off-site services that they hope will help residents build stable lives. The Coalition for Responsible Community Development and the Little Tokyo Service Center broke ground today and began work on the year-long project. Grant Sanu, Project Manager of Housing and Economic Services for the CRCD, says that it is often hard for foster youth to find stability once they turn 18.
The number one concern of the youth that we work with tends to be finding stable housing. Coming out of foster care, coming out of probation system, or coming off the streets, I think housing is really going to be the first priority to living a stable life.
The five buildings included in the renovation project will also include support services offered to residents in job placement and training, financial counseling, mental health counseling, and case management. The 36th Street apartments and Broadway apartments are expected to open next year. Chris Foy, Annenberg Radio News.
South Los Angeles community members gathered today to discuss the roots of incarceration among black men, from a baby's first breath to an arrest. Liz Warden has a story.
The event, hosted by the Great Beginnings for Black Babies Fatherhood Initiative, included speakers from the NAACP, LA County Sheriff's Office, gang intervention workers, and mental health specialists. The panelists discussed a number of issues that contribute to the rate of black men in prison, ranging from racial profiling to the lack of father figures in homes. Roderick Elsley, organizer of the event, says the discussion is aimed at finding solutions to staggering incarceration statistics. For example, just 3 in 100 black males who start kindergarten graduate from college.
This is the beginning of a dialogue. A dialogue that suggests that at the end of the process, or throughout the process, we want to begin moving solutions to practical programs, to practical initiatives, to things that we can champion that will impact people rather than just talk about it.
Dwayne Gabriel, a senior at Frederick Douglass Academy High School, was motivated by the panel discussion.
The meeting was completely empowering, but it is great to see that there is change from ideals and ideas to action.
The group didn't settle on one action plan. Some focused on nurturing the home life, others underscored rehabilitation programs. Still, all agreed the dialogue about solutions was a start at collaborating and changing the future for young black men. Liz Warden, Annenberg Radio News.
And for the weather, it will be a cold evening tonight with lows in the mid-50s, and we'll start off tomorrow with a lot of clouds, and by mid-afternoon it should be mostly sunny. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we'll talk to the winner of this year's USC Selden Award for Investigative Reporting. School's out, the words every student longs to hear, and Los Angeles students might get their wish early this year. The Los Angeles Unified School District is so desperate to close a $640 million budget hole, they might close schools a week early. Superintendent Ramon Cortinas writes on the district website that teachers and principals will have to do even more with less. He says the move will be a temporary fix, only needed until the state economy finally improves. A final decision is expected over the weekend, but if the plan is accepted, schools won't have much time to update their academic schedules. Annenberg Radio News' Tracy Oppenheimer asks parents how they feel about the new proposal. She has more on the story.
Bye. Children running to class, dragging rolling backpacks behind them. That's something that they'll be doing a little less if this school year is cut by a week. If Superintendent Ramon Cortinas's proposal to cut 1 week out of June passes, kids would get an extra week of summer sun and relaxation. But that's not good news for some parents.
It's going to affect the young ones. We have to work, and they're not going to be in school, so where are we going to leave them? That's going to be extra money that we have to pay because we need someone to take care of them.
Maria has a fourth grader at the 32nd Street School in South LA. She doesn't think this is the end of LAUSD cuts.
Cortinas told us it's not going to get better, it's going to get worse, so we're already expecting the worst.
So far, the teachers' union has agreed to 5 furlough days this upcoming school year and 7 days for the year following. It might be a nuisance for parents to have to find another week's worth of accommodations for their kids, but like many parents, Linda feels that it's also compromising her child's education.
All the students are going to be affected. They have to change the whole program they already had planned for the school, for the students.
School officials agree. Chet Hood is the 32nd Street School's Title I coordinator. Title I is a part of the U.S. education policy that focuses on helping economically disadvantaged students. The group often hit the hardest by district changes.
It's going to take a week of instruction off. I mean, plain and simple.
Most kids would love having one less week of tests and homework, but not all.
Kids are kids. You got some that are just happy that they're going to get an extra week of summer vacation, and then you've also got older students that are very concerned.
But in facing a budget crisis, LAUSD says the cuts have to come from somewhere. According to the district, this could save nearly $1.5 million and 2,000 LAUSD jobs.
That's a big plus side. Some jobs are being saved, but I think California's got some restructuring to do in priorities.
Priorities that the state, the school district, and now parents with an extra week to care for their kids may have to revise. Tracy Oppenheimer, Annenberg Radio News.
The Los Angeles Unified School District is facing budget cuts and tough times, but some programs out there are trying to help students succeed. Ariel Edwards-Levy takes a look at one of them.
Tens of thousands of students drop out of the LAUSD each year. But the nearly 200 girls gathered today in the Biltmore Hotel have a different plan. All of them want to go to college. Most, a grassroots mentoring organization, wants to help them get there. The group matches underprivileged 7th and 8th grade girls with mentors and helps them prepare for high school, college, and careers. Mentee Amirani Gonzalez says she now wants to go to Princeton or USC.
Well, MOST is a really good program and they help you go to college, you get scholarships, and it leads you your way through college and become someone really important.
For students who've never thought about attending college, touring campuses can open new possibilities. For mentor Michelle Owens, it was eye-opening in another way.
You know, I took it for granted that as you're finishing high school, you apply to colleges. You go on campus visits. I now realize what a limited perspective that is. For a large percentage of today's middle school and high school population, not going to college can seem like the only option.
All the seniors in the program this year are graduating and going to college. Ariel Edwards-Levy, Annenberg Radio News.
Treasure hunting isn't just from the gold rush days. Matthew Richmond shares how two Southern Californians are keeping the hunt alive.
Nathan Smith and Kate Brown don't look like prospectors. They are an old man with long gray beards. They don't live in a little wooden shack in the hills. Nathan is 40 years old, a dreadlock son of a Baptist minister from North Carolina. Kate is 30. She studied filmmaking at Duke University. For the last 3 years, they've been searching for lost treasures all over the West.
We've been all over. We've been in the Superstition Mountains, which is located in Phoenix, Arizona. We've been to Oklahoma for the Jesse James treasure. We've been in Anzio Borrego for the Peg Leg Lost Mine. We've been in the Chocolate Mountains. We're down at Cattle Canyon, which is in the Los Angeles National Forest on the San Gabriel River. And this is a well-known placer area.
Placer mining is basically looking for gold in sand and gravel on the sides of streams. Kate crouches on the edge of the stream.
Take a quick look at them to make sure there's no huge nugget in there.
Patiently sifting pans full of stones and gravel until the smallest, heaviest pieces are left.
You said you thought there was something promising in there. I don't see it at all.
That's a flake of gold right there. You see it?
I think I do.
There are little flecks of gold in the pebbles on the side of the stream. There are loose flecks in the sand, too. I was beginning to understand gold fever.
Look at that. See all that gold? That's gold, man. That's gold. Flower gold. I'm a nugget man myself.
We didn't find any nuggets that day. It had just rained and the stream was running fast. Plus, miners have been panning here for 160 years. I start to wonder, why do these two think they're going to find something that everybody else has missed? It turns out that finding treasure is a full-time job. Back in L.A., Kate and Nathan spend most of their days like so many Angelenos, on the internet, in coffee shops, in Hollywood.
So I start my search by going on Google, and I would type in Los Angeles gold locations.
They started treasure hunting after finding a book at a Borders in Los Angeles, America's Lost Treasures by W.C. Jameson. They picked one story about a Spanish ship sunk in Texas in the 1800s.
Every available space in the Barkentine's hold and much of the deck was filled with casks of riches. And the ship
this lost ship of Barkentine Creek has captivated Nathan and Kate ever since. Nathan Shuri found the outline of the ship buried in 10 feet of mud using Google Earth. So he and Kate hopped in their old Firebird and drove out there a couple years ago.
Not a place for the faint of heart, that is for sure. There are snakes out there, there are gators out there, there are spiders the size of, you know, your palms out there.
But they made it out to the spot with metal detectors in hand and found their buried treasure. Or so they say. It's on a piece of South Texas land owned by a rich family, the O'Connors. They're not keen on having this dreadlocked Californian come and dig near Little Creek on their ranch.
I think it's a situation of, like, anybody but the Californian.
Okay, the story gets complicated here. Nathan sued for the rights to dig for the treasure, and because of the Little Creek and the intricacies of maritime law, the judge ruled in his favor. Now Nathan and Kate can go back and dig for their gold. But is there even anything there?
The thrill of the hunt is very nice. And, you know, it's not like you're going to go out, like, if treasures were that easy to find, then everybody would be finding them.
The two prospectors admit for all their searching, they've never actually held treasure in their hand. But Nathan insists that they're getting closer and closer. We spent an afternoon in a place called the Chocolate Mountains, not far from the Mexican border and Joshua Tree National Park.
Barry, look how it breaks, because it's that rotten old quartz. This is the stuff that the gold comes in. Cherry quartz. Look at that. This is amazing, man.
We didn't find any gold that day either, but Nathan and Kate are sure that they will, and real soon.
We're standing on almost a mountain of gold. This is all gold bearing.
For Annenberg Radio News, this is Matt Richmond.
This wash is going to be real gold when we get down to the bedrock. Check this out.
For 21 years, USC School of Journalism has presented its top prize for investigative reporting to groundbreaking journalists uncovering big topics. This year's Seldom Ring Award winner, T. Christian Miller, shed light on a major war issue.
Tell me about the subject matter and how you even came to organize this story.
I began covering contracting in Iraq in 2004, and at the time I was covering it like a follow the money type story. As I was doing that, I kept coming across individual workers who had been hurt or who had been killed or who had suffered some sort of a mental disorder because they had been exposed to dangers of a war zone. And I began to think, what happens to these guys?
Tell me about what you did discover with your reporting. What did happen?
It was really interesting. What happens with these guys is they are part of a healthcare system that used to be kind of this really small, obscure healthcare system to take care of workers who were working overseas. But with the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, it became a much, much larger system. And there were a lot, thousands and thousands of people who were going through this, seeing workers who were in roadside bomb explosions or who were having post-traumatic stress disorders.
Do you think with the partnering with the mediums, has it helped really propel your story and give it more salience?
Yeah, I think because now it's been appearing on this form and this outlet, I think there is a real positive multiplier effect that comes about from the partnerships.
How come the private contractors and all those people in the war, why is that not a big to-do in the news?
One of the things that I liked about this story was that it was sort of counterintuitive. To the extent that anybody has heard or about private contractors, it's usually the extent of a private military company. But a lot of the civilian contractors who are at work in Afghanistan and Iraq are just kind of blue-collar people. These are workers who are being injured. So how are you going to deal with these? There's still this issue that they are private contractors. They could quit. They're not soldiers. Deserved at least what they had been promised in terms of their health care and benefits.
What do you see that Congress is doing?
That's been gratifying. After the ABC News piece appeared, there was a hearing held by the House Government Reform Committee, and hopefully sometime this spring, what we'll see is some legislative action.
Now we check in with Alex Goldsmith to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News.
Thanks very much, Heather. Coming up tonight on Annenberg TV News, City Hall Showdown. Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa says that an unexpected increase in revenue means that they don't have to shut down the park and library services that he thought they might have to. But they're still a little bit behind on revenue. Department of Water and Power may need to raise its rates anyway. The showdown over those rates, we'll have more details on that later tonight. Also, President Obama and President Dmitry Medvedev of Russia sign a new nuclear treaty. See how that could affect things going forward in terms of U.S.-Russia relations and nuclear power relations, all that and more, tonight on Annenberg TV News.
Well, thanks so much, Alex. Well, that's it for us this Thursday. We had help from our producer, Jessica Florence. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Heather Hope.